Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We're talking with Joe Graydon. He is one of North America's leading consumer pharmacology experts, and he's written a book with his wife, Teresa, called Top Scripts, Doctors Make and How to Avoid Them. And he's also written another book called People's Pharmacy. Was it People's Pharmacy he wrote?
That was the first one. That's correct. There are about 19 other books in between.
Wow. I want to ask you something that you talk about in your book that I believe is close to your heart, and that is drugs and the problem with pharmaceutical drugs and their effects on people.
Drugs save lives. I mean, there's no question about it, but they also harm us, and far too often they kill us.
Now, you say they kill us. What's going on? What's happening in the sense that we go to a doctor, we expect them to give us something to, you know, let's go on the heart issue. You know, we give them something because we've got a heart problem. And they give us a medication, and we end up dying from it. What are some of the problems around that?
Well, some of the problems are, let's just take as a for example a blood thinner, what we call an anticoagulant. Now, these drugs like warfarin, Coumadin, as a for example, can be a lifesaver. No question about it. They can reduce the risk of blood clots, and those blood clots can cause strokes and all kinds of other mischief. The trouble is that it's like walking a tightrope. Too much of the drug can lead to hemorrhage, and hemorrhage, bleeding in the brain, for example, can cause what's called a hemorrhagic stroke. So the anticoagulants are very, very dangerous drugs and have to be treated with a great deal of respect. When taken with the wrong combination, other medicines, in some cases even over-the-counter supplements or even foods, these drugs can become quite hazardous. So people need to understand all about the side effects, the early warning signs of danger, and in particular, what other drugs are incompatible. Pharmacists and physicians are now using computers that we thought 20 years ago would reduce the risk of these interactions. But all across North America, physicians and pharmacists are overriding what we call these alerts. They have what's called alert fatigue. It's like the little boy who cried wolf. So when they see a warning on their computer, they kind of go, oh, well, let's just override that. It's probably not important. Well, it may not be important for 9 out of 10 patients, but if you're that one patient for whom it is important, it can be life-threatening. So drug interactions are a huge problem, and we haven't figured out a way to solve it. The patient has to be involved.
Are there certain classes of drugs in your research that are more deadly than others?
There are. I think that we take for granted what we call non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs. You might be familiar with drugs like ibuprofen or naproxen. They're available by prescription as diclofenac, for example, would be one example. There are a number of others, probably over a dozen different non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Because some of them are available over the counter, we take them really without too much respect. These drugs are commonly considered problematic because of the digestive tract upset, the heartburn, even the bleeding ulcers, but they may also increase the risk of heart attacks and strokes, raising blood pressure, affecting the kidneys, and again, these drugs can interact with many, many other drugs. So that's just one example of a medicine that we far too often take for granted.
Well, and that's an example of one that, you know, really, for most people, they self-prescribe.
A great many people self-prescribe it, exactly right. Literally tens of millions of people take NSAIDs every day in North America. But a lot of physicians also prescribe these medicines in higher doses for back pain, for arthritis, not always warning people adequately about the complications, especially the cardiovascular risks.
Do you think that that is something that these pharmaceutical companies that make these products should be liable for, or is it something that as consumers who use Tylenol or ibuprofen that we need to be really conscious of and take our own health into our own hands?
I think we need to be far more responsible. I mean, that isn't to say that the pharmaceutical industry shouldn't also take a measure of responsibility here. But ultimately, we're the ones who put these pills in our mouth, whether it's a prescription or whether it's over the counter. We need to know what those side effects are. So if you start to have black tarry stools, for example, that could very well be an example of bleeding in your digestive tract. You need to know about that so that if that occurs, you call up your doctor immediately and say, "Doctor, I fear that I might be bleeding. Can I come in and have a test? Can we, check this out?" So people need to know what to look for, and doctors and pharmacists need to warn patients in advance. These are the early warning signs of danger.
Are there screw-ups happening because people are switching from, like, a name-brand drug to a generic brand?
Well, fortunately, Canada, I think, has been a little bit more proactive in this regard than the U.S., but that doesn't mean that Canada is completely safe. One of the problems that's happened over the last decade or so is that most of our generic medicines are being made abroad, and that means China and India and Thailand and Brazil and Mexico, and we don't always have the degree of oversight over the manufacturing that really would be desirable. So we've learned in the last few years that there are some major complications, especially in manufacturing where there is no regular oversight, and the regulatory authorities around the world have not been very good at getting into these factories and really inspecting them. And even when they inspect them, they sometimes miss the problems because there has been out-and-out fraud and data fudging. So the end result is, are those generic drugs up to snuff? Are they the quality medicines that we all would expect that they should be? And the answer, sadly, has been not always. So if a patient suspects that his or her generic medicine is not performing the way the brand name drug did, please notify your physician, notify the pharmacist, notify the regulatory authorities, and be very proactive.
You talk in your book about the aging population and doctor screw-ups with elderly people. What are the factors, or what are some of the things that if I'm elderly or if I have an elderly person in my family that I should be aware of that it could possibly be a mistake by my doctor?
Well, too many medicines to start with. If an older person is taking more than a handful of different pills simultaneously, that increases the risk for those deadly drug interactions that I was talking about a little while ago.
A handful being like 12?
A handful being a handful, like about 3 or 4. After 5 different drugs simultaneously, there's an increased risk for mischief. So, whenever an older person is taking more than 5 or 6 drugs, somebody needs to look over that shoulder and make sure that there's not an incompatibility or a problem. Number two, most primary care and even specialists are not skilled in geriatric pharmacology. What that means is they don't know that older people are especially vulnerable to certain kinds of medications or certain doses. When kidney function is not up to snuff, and that's quite common in older people, it may not be that there's actual kidney failure, but kidney function may be compromised. And so as a result, that new anticoagulant, Pradaxa, that everybody is seeing advertised, and thinks is such a wonderful medicine, it may be more dangerous in an older person than in someone who's 40 or 50. Now we get into the range of what we'll call cognitive dysfunction. Something that a lot of physicians just don't appreciate. They go, Aunt Martha, she's just getting up in years, so you can't expect her to be as sharp as she was when she was 40 or 50. But what people don't realize is that Martha may be taking anticholinergic drugs. These are medications that can literally affect the neurochemistry of the brain and lead to cognitive dysfunction. So these are common drugs like alprazolam, which is an anti-anxiety agent, drugs like cimetidine, the brand name was Tagmet, that you can buy over the counter. has anticholinergic activity. Tylenol PM, the PM piece is diphenhydramine. It's an antihistamine. It was in Benadryl. Has anticholinergic activity. Now, you add that to a drug like amitriptyline that an older person might be prescribed to get a decent night's sleep, or if you even add it to a diuretic like furosemide, now you have a half a dozen drugs on board that all have anticholinergic activity. No wonder Aunt Martha is becoming forgetful. No wonder she is having difficulty making decisions. So a physician needs to be aware of the anticholinergic activity of all of the drugs an older person might be taking, including, by the way, those bladder drugs, you know, the overactive bladder problem. So there are a great many drugs that have anticholinergic activity, and doctors need to know about it, and pharmacists need to pay more attention to it. There's a list, we call it the BEERS list, B-E-E-R-S. These are a list of drugs that should generally be avoided in older people. We've listed them in the book Top Screw-Ups so that people can actually look for themselves and say, oh, wow, Grandma shouldn't be getting alprazolam. She shouldn't be taking a drug called Toradol or Ketorolac. She shouldn't be taking dicyclamine. She shouldn't be on diphenhydramine. And they can be in touch with the pharmacist and the physician and say, let's reevaluate because the experts say this drug is inappropriate for someone over the age of 65.
You know, it's almost like, you know, I was looking at that list and it's quite comprehensive. It's almost like you should, like every doctor should have that in his office.
Well, every doctor should have it in his office and check on it every time a patient over the age of 65 comes in and is taking medicines. But what we've come to realize is that doctors are just too busy. Hmm. And so that's why every patient and every patient's family should have that list so that they can check on, you know, how Aunt Martha is doing, how Dad is doing, how Grandma is doing, and prevent problems. Because if we leave it up to the doctor, I'm afraid that we will not succeed in this quest.
Well, you know, we haven't even got into some of the other screw-ups that doctors make, but what are some of the screw-ups that patients make?
Well, you know, one of the first mistakes is not really telling your story. You know, I said that doctors will often interrupt you within the first 15 or 20 seconds of the conversation. You know what pilots do when they're, you know, interacting with the air traffic controllers, the tower? They have what's called a kind of teach-back process. They make sure that they have heard what the instructions are, and what you need to do is do the same thing with your doctor. So when you tell a doctor your story, you know, what your symptoms are, what you're concerned about, one of the first things you need to do is you need to ask your doctor to recap to make sure that you, your doctor actually heard what you said and it registered. So if you assume automatically, oh, yeah, my doctor was listening, he was paying attention, he knows what the problem is, well, that's your first mistake. So you need to verify that your doctor has heard your story. Number two, you cannot rely on your own memory. You know, if you go into the doctor's office and he says, oh, you've got hypertension, all of a sudden your brain may not work very well. You know, and if it's even worse than that, if it's something like cancer, you know, everything the doctor says after the word cancer comes out sounding like, you need to have a person there listening for you, especially if it's a, you know, serious diagnosis. You might even need to take along a recording device like your smartphone and just say, doctor, I may forget some of the important things you're telling me. Let me record this conversation. And then you've got to do your own homework. You've got to follow up on what your doctor said. You've got to learn what the side effects of the medicine are and what symptoms to look out for.
Joe, we're out of time, but tell us, you got about 10, 15 seconds just to sell your buck for people that are listening.
Well, it's time to take responsibility. If you want to prevent some of these terrible screw-ups that are killing literally hundreds of thousands of people every year, take it on. It's important. It could save your life or someone you love.
The book is called Top Screw-Ups Doctors Make and How to Avoid Them. It's published by Three Rivers Press, and I'm sure you can get it on Amazon and any bookstore across the country. Joe, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Stay well.
That's it for this week's show. I want to thank Reg Fair, our producer, and producers across the country that are making the show available to you. Thank you for listening. And if you have a suggestion for the Health First show, we'd love to hear from you. Drop by our website, healthfirstradio.com.